Reading from the book of Jonah in the second chapter. This is really something. When we read this chapter, we might read this chapter and then let you ask a few questions or whatever. But I want to read this chapter tonight. Chapter 2 of the book of Jonah. Then Jonah prayed unto the Lord his God out of the fish's belly, and said, I cried by reason of mine affliction unto the Lord, and he heard me. Out of the belly of hell cried I, and thou heardest my voice. For thou hadst cast me into the deep in the midst of the seas, and the floods compassed me about, and thy billows and thy waves passed over me. Then I said, I am cast out of thy sight, yet I will look again toward thy holy temple. The waters compassed me about even to the soul. The depth closed me round about. The weeds were wrapped about my head. I went down to the bottoms of the mountains. The earth with her bars was about me forever. Yet hast thou brought up my life from corruption, O Lord my God. When my soul fainted within me, I remembered the Lord. And my prayer came in unto thee, into thine holy temple. They that observe lying vanities forsake their own mercy. For I will sacrifice unto thee with the voice of thanksgiving. I will pay that I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord. And the Lord spake unto the fish, and it vomited out Jonah upon the dry land. Now you know that is quite a reading right there. Jonah said that he cried out of the belly of hell. He went through all of these things, was caught within the environment of all of these problems. Finally, God had mercy, got him out of the belly of the whale, and then Jonah still was as contrary as he could be. Are you listening? I said, after God got him out of the belly of hell, he still was as contrary as he can be. Here he said, I'll pay my vows, Lord, I'll do all these things. And here in the fourth chapter, we find it says, but it displeased Jonah exceedingly, and he was very angry. And he prayed unto the Lord and said, I pray thee, O Lord, was not this my saying when I was yet in my country? Therefore I fled before unto Tarshish, for I knew that thou art a gracious God and merciful, slow to anger, and of great kindness, and repenteth thee of the evil. Therefore now, O Lord, take, I beseech thee, my life from me, for it is better for me to die than to live. Then said the Lord, thou doest well to be angry. Isn't that something? God raised you up out of the belly of hell, and you're still just as contrary as you can be. How are you listening to me tonight? You know, God said, you walk contrary to me, I walk contrary to you. I was just talking yesterday about people. I've got so many people at Little Bethlehem that are contrary. Numbers of people that came here to Little Bethlehem were so contrary till it was unreal. Finally, I got some of them to where they would work with me a little bit, but I still got some that they are the most contrary things you ever seen in your life. They're contrary to whatever I want to do, whatever I say, whatever I plan. I can be up here preaching and say something and their spirits will go contrary just like that. Their thoughts will go contrary. They're just as contrary as they can be. Yet God saved them from hell, and yet they're contrary as they can be. Isn't that something? You know, Jonah here, talking about this, it showed the Lord. The Lord, Jonah was a type of the Lord. When Jesus came, they asked for a sign. He said, I'm not going to give you but one sign, and that's the sign of the prophet Jonah. Jonah went down for a few days into the bottomless pit of the ocean, as we would say. And so it was that Jesus went down into the bellies of hell. Now, I say bottomless pit. They've not fathomed some of the bottom of it yet. And here he said, I was in the belly of hell. Have you ever cried to God out of the belly of hell? If you've never cried to God out of the belly of hell, you've not had a real experience yet. But as you go along, you'll have a real experience. And you'll find yourself literally crying to God out of the very chambers of hell. And Jonah said, I cried out of the belly of hell, and he heard me. You know, Jonah was in a terrible fix being in the belly of hell. But did you know that some people have been in a worse fix than Jonah? There are some things that you can go through a whole lot worse than Jonah. A whole lot worse. Some people go through things that's a lot worse than Jonah, or the things that he went through with. So then out of the belly of hell, he said, I cried and thou heardest me. And sure enough, just as quick as God got him up, he went just as contrary as he could to God. You know, that ought to let us know how compassionate God really is. Jonah tells us here in his words that anybody that intermeddleth, that is, that takes the wrong outlook in life, that they forsake their own mercy, in that God has given them mercy to help them out of their conditions and help them out of their imprisonments. But because of their thoughts and the way that they look at things, and because of their contrariness of spirit, then they forsake their own mercy. They are not able to even believe in what God has done for them. And they find themselves in a terrible condition. So then it is a horrible thing to get down into the bellies of hell. You know what the bellies of hell is? It's when you get carried away with your own belly and all of your labor is for your belly. Then you get caught in a wilderness and you get out there in that old beastly body of the whale, and you get carried down to the deeps. You know, the Bible speaks of the depths of Satan. And God said there's some people that have never known the depths of Satan. Now, some of you have played around with the devil, and you've got yourself in problems, and you've really went through some trouble. But many of you have, as of yet, you've never known the depths of Satan. Now, you wait until you really get caught in something and you get down into the depths of despair and the depths of terror and the depths of corruption, and you get bound with something that there's no way that you can get loose from it. See, you play around with demons. I see a lot of you play around with demons of lust, men and women alike. I see you play around with demons of contrariness. I see you play around with demons of hatred, demons of malice, demons of covetousness, demons of fault finding, demons of gossip, demons of bickering and backbiting, all kind of demons. I see you play with them. You know, and when you play with them, right at that time, it seems like you've got control of them. But after a while, if you'll watch, that devil and that demon will have control of you. And then you'll want to get loose from it, but you won't be able to get loose from it. You get an old melancholy devil and get to feeling sorry for yourself because your mother lives on the other side of the hill and you live over here. And you can't spend the rest of your life right there with your mother and daddy, your brother and sister, because your husband is over here and God's got him over here. Take an old melancholy devil. Let it be vice versa. Let it be the man and his parents is just over the hill. Or let somebody, as you would say, mistreat you a little bit. Or everybody don't pet you and woo you. And everybody don't let you have your way. And everybody don't cater to you every time you have a little temper and get upset. Let an old melancholy devil get a hold of you and get off in the corner and start pining away. And don't eat nothing. Because you can't live over yonder with your relatives. Because you can't have everything that your heart desires in the way of wealth and riches. Because you can't have your way. Because everybody won't pat you. Just go ahead and do it. The first news you know, that devil's got a hold of you, and he'll bind you hand and feet, and you'd give 1,000 worlds if you could get away from that torture and that torment. He'll get into your system, and it'll be like poison in your blood veins. And it'll be like it was over there when Jesus spoke in Revelation of those scorpions, when they strike you and the sting is so bad that you'll pray for death. You'll wish you could die. I've had demons to get a hold of me in my lifetime that made me pray to God and ask Him to take my life. I was so tortured and so tormented. And you know what I told some of the brethren when I come here? I said, brethren, God took me out into the deeps, and He took me out way out yonder in the chambers of despair. And I said, you brethren that want to be spiritual and you want to get into spiritual things, I said, I'm giving you a warning. And I'm telling you, I said, you play around with devils and try to get out into spiritual things and you're going to be one sad person. You're going to be a miserable, miserable person. Because I've been out there when I prayed to die and I wasn't making believe. You say, Brother Pike, you wouldn't pray to die. I prayed to die because death was better than what I was going through with. And I prayed and I cried as I prayed and pleaded with God to take my life. Jonah was angry. He said, just take my life, Lord. Just take my life. You know why Jonah said that? Because he couldn't have his way. He was just plain contrary. He didn't want to die. He wasn't wanting to die. He found out when that hot, blistering sun come down upon him that he wanted to live just as much as he did when he was in the belly of that fish. But there is places that you can get into to where you'd rather die than live. Pain and misery and torment to where death is much better. The Bible teaches when those scorpions sting those people during the time of the tribulation period that they will actually seek death, but death will flee from them. I've known of people, I've been acquainted with them when they were on their beds of suffering, when they really pleaded for death, they wanted to die. They said, I hurt so bad. I'm in so much misery. If I could die, if I could just die. There's been people that pleaded with others to kill them because they were so miserable. I heard of a case where two of the cars came together and caught a man in the side and pinched him in like this as they came and hooked themselves together. He got caught in the pinch, and he was in such misery till he begged the people, said, please, somebody, please take something and knock my brains out. And I heard of another man where there was a wreck in a tractor and trailer, I believe it was, and the man was caught in the flames, and the flames was burning him to death, and he pleaded for the policeman to take his gun and to shoot him. And the policeman was so tore up, I understand that he told him. Said, I just can't do it, but said, there's my gun if anybody wants to do it. Said, I'll turn my head. The man was in such misery. I saw some things while we were down in South America. I made mention of them to you before. I saw pictures as we walked down the sidewalk, a police or someone beckoned for us to come into a place. And I went in there and there was huge films and pictures that was so lifelike, it was almost unbelievable. And there was every description of wrecks. People that was caught with their head crushed in under the dash. And people that was torn to pieces and little babies with their eyes popping out of the sockets where they'd run over them and mash the entrails out. And it was so horrifying till I couldn't hardly believe it. Every kind of situation, trains that had dismembered people and them laying there in their blood, and they had took these pictures and they had posted somebody along the sidewalk to beckon for people to come in, to let them see these horrible scenes, to stop them from killing each other and running over each other and to make them dry with some sense. Folks, I never realized that it could be so horrible in being caught in twisted metal and the way that it could do you, like it did Brother Branham when they said it just broke his arm and just wrapped it around like that and just busted his skull open up. He just crushed it in. Horrible situations. And Jonas and I cried out of the belly of hell. And I said, oh God, deliver me. Deliver me. Folks, you don't know how well off you are. Going around pining. Spirits of self-pity. Fussing and talking about having a hard time. Talking about having problems. Because you can't have everything you want and when you want it. And because you can't have your way, and because the preacher reproves you a little bit or tries to correct you a little bit, you don't know what you're doing. You don't understand what suffering is. I picked up a letter today that was a plea from over in Africa, I believe it is. I don't know if it's Somalia. I believe it's Somalia, is it? Thousands upon thousands of people are literally starving to death. The pictures with the flies all over the little ones. Tormented and starving, hungry. No help. And we eat and we drink till we get as fat and blowed up like a balloon. And we fuss because we don't have it all the time to glutton off of. Let's tell it like it is. And them little babies over there, skinny as a rail, as we say, hungry and starving to death. This brother stated in his letter, said, I just literally stood and wept. Said I was just broke all to pieces and I wept as I looked and saw the people, so many of them, and children literally starving to death. And said, we finally received permission from the government to go in there and do something. Said they gave us 50 acres of land to go and set something up for world evangelism to where we could help feed the hungry in that area. Folks, what are we doing? See, we worry and won't help and won't work and just fret, and one run in with the police and another run in with the police, and all because of our foolishness of not listening and won't pay attention. And we reproach little Bethlehem and we reproach everything that we got out here. And if we put you to do anything, you half-heartedly do it. You ain't got your mind on it. You don't care that much about it. You don't pay that much attention to it. Waste. The Bible said he that is wasteful is brother to a sluggard. Waste thousands upon thousands of dollars doing nothing. See, and people still starving to death. It's like I told Sister Betty today. I said, Betty, don't you ever let a letter come in here. I don't care where it's from, what country or what race or what people. Don't ever let a letter come in here that's pleading for help for them that are hungry without letting me know about it. We need to do something, not only through the letters and the pleads, but we need to do something personally on our own. We need to do something with the plane and with the boat and with the other things we've got to help people with. I noticed that the same organization that's trying to take care of those hungry people have just recently contacted the man that's got the plane over in Winda. And they've had some of their people out there working on it to get it ready so that they could use it for the glory of God. Those people that have reached hundreds of thousands of people that's been hungry, we've helped them in a little way to reach some of them. But the same plane that we had considered getting, we had had the man here at the campground talk to him about it. The same man, the same plane, they're getting that plane and they're putting it to work for God to get food to those hungry people. And here we are doing nothing. As far as really getting down to business and doing what we ought to do compared to what others are doing, we're doing nothing. You know why? A lot of us are too gullible. A lot of us don't have no compassion. We don't have no concern. Somebody can tell us about the hungry, and we say, well, they're way over yonder. I'm over here. That ain't my affair. Charity begins at home. I don't have time to mess with that. And within 30 minutes after you have impressed them with the need, they forget all about it. They may not even think about it anymore. That's why that our relatives, our children, are literally eating us up just like devils and demons. Just like a dog eating on, gnawing on a bone. They take everything we got, everything we can get, because we're not giving it to the needy and to the poor, and we're trying to use it for our own selfish purposes. Therefore, the devils and demons are just literally devouring us, even through our own children. It's a dollar over here and 10 over yonder and 500 over here. It's some kind of light bill, and it's some kind of this bill, and some kind of that bill, and some kind of another bill. You know what it is? God is upset at us. God is upset. He's just letting something just swallow us up. Devils and demons are just literally swallowing up the people. They can't keep up their light bills. They can't keep. It's all because they just want to eat and drink and frolic and buy. For the Lord stated in His words that if you'd labor, that you might have to give and help others. He said, I will rebuke the devourer for your sake, and he won't destroy the fruits of your ground. You won't bring it home to put it into buckets with holes. He said, your health will return unto you speedily. You won't spend it all on doctors, lawyers, trying to get you out of scrapes and trying to patch your body up. But as long as you're greedy and gullible, it's going to be that you're going to be in that same condition. Not only you or me or America, but the entire world. A lot of those countries are on starvation tonight because they wouldn't listen to men like Paul the Apostle. And they wouldn't listen to the gospel. And they drove them out of their country and they stoned them to death. And they were gullible and selfish. And today, there's generations of them that's literally starving to death because of it. Folks, if you and I stand by the way that we've been doing and the way that America's been doing and let those people continue to go hungry, I'll tell you what, God will literally take our heads off of our bodies for it. If my little children was down here starving to death in my home and you wouldn't give them a helping hand because you said, well, that's too far for me to walk down there and they're over yonder and I'm over here, don't you know that I'd hate you unless God was in my heart in a great way? I'd hate your very appearance. If I even saw you, I'd hate. If you let my children starve to death, I would hate your very image. And God said, I will despise your image in the morning. But you know what we need to do? We need to get out of the belly of hell like Jonah did. Get up and do something for God. And not get angry and not get upset and not get all out of sauce every time we're reproved, every time we're corrected, every time we get into a little tight. You know, the Bible said, doth not nature itself teach you? There's going to be a good day and a bad day. There's going to be a springtime and a fall. There's going to be an autumn and a winter. You're going to be up and you're going to be down. What's wrong with that? If God didn't let a little wintertime come to kill the parasites out, you'd be so haughty nobody couldn't get along with you. I've watched here, and just as soon as God starts prospering somebody and they get up a little bit, they get haughty and hateful and they put their foot on the brothers or on the sisters. And God has to chop them all the way back down. The devils and the demons, the Bible said the rich answereth haughty, but the poor will use entreaty because he's got to have some help. The haughty, you know, they figure, we don't need any help. So they can be just as haughty as they want to. But the poor can't do that. The poor's got to have a helping hand. So they use entreaty to get somebody to help them. So there's going to be a winter time. But that don't have any bearing on what I said when it comes to helping the poor. The Bible said the sluggard won't plow by reason of cold. Neither shall he reap in the time of harvest. Did you know that if you've got money and you lay money up, or if you put it in things instead of helping people, don't you know that God isn't going to let you into the kingdom of God? It doesn't matter how religious we are. The Bible said pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this. Not to be religious, not to belong to a church, but to visit the widows and the orphans in their afflictions and then keep yourself unspotted from the world. And God wasn't talking about some widows here over here that's got more and they know what to do with, or some widows that's got incomes that can feed themselves, or some widows that's too lazy to do anything. God wasn't talking about that kind of widow. As a matter of fact, he speaks of other widows. He said, let the families take care of the widows. Let the relatives take care of them. That the church be not charged with it. That the church may take care of them that are widows indeed. And that serve God that's clean and holy. Women that have lived truthfully with their companions and been holy and godly and pure. And then when their companions departed from them, they continued to give their service fully to God in holy consecration. Said, these are widows indeed. Said, these are the kind that's to be taken care of. Said, don't mess with the others. And especially with the young widows. Said, when they begin to wax wanton, they'll sin against God. They'll let an old devil of lust or something come on them. And you can't get along with them and you can't tell them nothing and you can't do nothing. Sad to say, even some of the young married women are bad, let alone widows. But we need to feed the hungry, take care of the poor. We need to do something for Jesus. We need to visit the widows and the orphans in their afflictions to keep ourselves unspotted from the world. It doesn't matter if they're 10,000 miles away, if there's any way to get a piece of bread to them, if there's any way to get something to them. I got a few people here that when I made a plea for some of the Korean people or some of the refugees that had fled for safety, I made a plea and some of the men or women, they got behind it and they stood with me and they helped me. And they've been supporting a little one. And I think in that some of their support has run out. Whereas it does that yearly, then some of them has renewed their support to feed some little hungry child to do something. But folks, it's going to be bad when you get there before the judgment of God and you stand there and God will say, how many widows did you take care of? How many orphans did you ever feed? How many dollars did you ever spend feeding the hungry? And then God will say to you, if he so desired, didn't you make hundreds upon hundreds? Didn't I give you thousands upon thousands of dollars that you spent for everything that you wanted? How is it that you couldn't find a little bit of that to share with the needy? God's going to be upset. And you stand there being a religious person and you say, well, I fasted and I prayed and I've done it. And he says, away with your solemn assemblies, away with your fasting. Away with all of that, I'm not interested in that. That you feed the hungry, that you take the naked into your home and clothe them, and that you don't just pass by your own flesh and see them starving hungry. This is the kind of fasting that I've chosen. Or this is the kind of concern that I'm looking for. That's when the Bible said labor that you might have to give. I've seen some of the men sit down there in the men's meeting and shut up their bowels of compassion and wouldn't give and give $2 or $3 just to, you know, keep from being a spectacle when the others were straining every nerve in their body seemingly to try to do something. But did you know some of those people are in a terrible condition today? And I found out from their companions, not because I sought it, but because God brought it to the house. I found out from some of their companions that they had money, hundreds and hundreds of dollars, when they sat back like a pauper. You know what? God will get you one day. The Bible said you'll throw everything you got to the bats. There's millionaires and rich people that they're laying up money for their convenience, and they're laying it up for their relatives, and they're laying it up for their children, and they're laying it up for this and for that, and they're giving it to societies, and they're giving it to all kind of operations, not giving nothing to God. Even making out wills and whatever, to all of these kind of things, for people to frolic. Scouts, Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts, in some kind of a silly organization. And they think when they stand before God that God's going to compliment them for that, instead of rend them and tear them to pieces of it. The Bible said, "Beware you that forget God, lest I tear you into pieces." And you let my little ones die, and you let my little ones starve. And someday I'm going to meet you like a bear that's been robbed of her cubs. And people are doing these things. And they're laying up, buying, getting gain, letting those people go hungry. They're doing those things. But you know what? God's going to get them one day for it. You watch and see. One of these days you're going to pay for that. One of these days you're going to have diseases like all the rest of America and the world is having. Diseases, things that's going to make you uncomfortable. All of these things is literally going to eat you up because of your selfishness. The world today can't hardly eat a decent meal. Can't hardly eat the things they want because of so many problems. God said, because you've done these things, all of the diseases of Egypt is going to come upon you. All the botches of Egypt. He said, in every plague that's written in this book is going to come upon you. And he said, every plague, even those that's not recorded in this book, is going to come upon you. Today, there's so many diseases that even the doctors can't define them all. And why are they upon the people? Because the people are selfish, haughty, gullible, and won't share with the needy. That's what's wrong with them. Their lust, their greed has literally eaten them up. Their zeal has eaten God up. Their zeal for their foolish things. Like a brother come to me today. He said, "Brother Pike, I'm thinking about getting a certain vehicle. Should I get it?" I said, "Brother, if you need it for God, get it. If you need 10 for God, get them." I said, "But if it's just a matter of getting something you won't do nothing but take the money away from the kingdom of God and away from hungry children." It is my staunch conviction that if you've got one dime, if there's a hungry child and you know about it, and you can get to that child and feed that child and you won't do it, you are a hypocrite. And you don't have any eternal life. You don't have any part in eternal life. If Jesus Christ spilt the blood from out of his veins and the blood dripped from his veins to try to help somebody, then unless we can give everything that we've got, our all to God as a living sacrifice, then God won't accept us. Now that's my conviction. If you can find another route to heaven, well, that's you and your route. That's you and your conviction. But I'm telling you what I understand of God and of the Bible. That if you have one dime and there's a hungry child, and you're not sharing with them hungry children, you are a hypocrite and you are a stingy sort of a thing that God will despise in the morning. Jonah said, "I cried out of the belly of hell and God picked me up." But then when God got him up, he was just as contrary as he could be. God brought hundreds of thousands of people out of Egypt. When he got them out of Egypt and saved them from their hard taskmakers, they looked back into Egypt. They were so gullible, they kept mumbling and grumbling about the garlic and the onions. Just think now, after God had gone to the trouble he had, God had literally tore up a country, a nation, had literally wrecked that nation for their sake, trying to help them get out of bondage. And then they were just as contrary to Moses and what God was trying to do, just as contrary as they could be. And they grumbled so much that God got so upset till he opened the earth up and let the earth swallow every one of them and killed every last one of them. Didn't spare nobody but Caleb and Joshua. Isn't that something? They mumble and they grumble. The Bible said, "Any man having put his hand to the plow, looking back, he's not fit for the kingdom of God." Folks, we need to do something. We need to rise up and do something. We need to stop saying, "I can't. I can't. Woe is me. I can't. I got a headache. I got a heartache. I got a woe. I can't. Did you know I get a heartache, I get a headache, and I get a woe, but I still can. I still can do all things through Christ that strengthens me. My headache ain't got nothing to do with it. My heartache doesn't have anything to do with it. My woes don't have anything to do with it. I got a job to do for God whether I got a headache or not. A man that's on a battlefield out yonder that's fighting, it doesn't matter if he's got a wound in the shoulder. He's still on the battlefield. He's got a job to do. He's got to do everything he can as long as he can hold his head up. He can't lay over and go to sleep. He's got to fight as long as he can keep them eyes open. He's got a job to do. Your family problems and your wife problems and your husband problems and your children problems and your financial problems and your neighbor problems and your aches and pains, all of that has nothing to do with it. What you need to do is do something for God. You need to do something for God. And I'll tell you something, in the day of the judgment, you're going to be inexcusable. You can say, well, my car's broke down and my roof has got a leak in it and my vehicle won't run and I got to do this and my children I got to look at. But there's going to come a day when God's going to say, do you remember Abraham when he laid his child on the altar and went on and done something for me? Do you remember all of those things back down through the years that I said was your example when people wandered in caves and dens, didn't even have a place to live, let alone a car to drive? And yet the Bible said all of them obtained a good report by faith. And the Bible said, seeing in that day that we're going to be compassed about with such a great cloud of witnesses, what are we going to do? He said, lay aside every weight and the sin that does so easily beset you, and run with patience the race that is set before you. Somebody say, Brother Pike, sometimes I just don't have sufficient bread. Well, be grateful. Some people don't even have a house or a roof over their head. If you've got a roof on your head to keep the rain out, be thankful to God. I don't know of anybody that's been out of bread. I know of some people that's in other places is out of bread. I don't know of anybody out here that's been out of bread unless it's laziness or they just won't listen. I know you can tell me. There are some of you, if I listened to you, you'd make me think that you was on starvation and you couldn't get nothing. But you are a liar. You're not. You are a liar. All you do is laziness. And you lie about it. And you want self-pity. You want people to look on you to think that there's something wrong with you. And there is something wrong with you. You're lazy. You won't do right. So that we don't have no problems like that around here. All of us have bread enough to spare. Did you know that? We have bread enough to spare. You might not have everything you want. Because that flesh don't never quit wanting. If you get one wife, it wants two wives. If you get two wives, it wants three wives. If you get one husband, it wants two husbands. If you get three husbands, you want four husbands. If you get one Cadillac, you want two Cadillacs. If you get $100, you want $1,000. If you get $1,000, you want $10,000. If you get $10,000, you want $100,000. If you get $100,000, you want $1,000,000. It don't never stop wanting. If you get one pair of shoes, it wants another one. You get one suit, you want another one. Get one dress, you want another one. It don't never stop. But what we need to do is do something for God. If God gives you a suit, that's good. If God gives you a car, that's good. If God gives you $10,000, that's good. But the thing to do is do something for God. If you're not doing something for God, you are going to hell. Brother Pike is your pastor. I want to be the first to tell you, you are going to hell if you don't do something for God. If you don't share your finance with God, if you don't share your life in prayer with God, if you don't stop this backbiting, this gossiping, this bickering, all of these things that you're doing, you're going to die and go to hell. If you don't get yourself straightened out and stop grumbling and mumbling and finding fault and sitting around the table taking the preacher apart and everybody else apart, and get in and give something to God and do something for God, you're going to die and go to hell. If you don't quit grumbling and mumbling because you feel like somebody has slighted your children or slighted you, or you got left out on something, you're going to die and go to hell. If you don't quit pining over your relatives and your friends and your faults and your shortcomings, you're going to die and go to hell. I tell you what, they're going to put you in a box. Watch and see. If you keep on, they'll put you in a box and they'll throw dirt in your face. I know you don't like this. Satan, you have never liked it. You will never like it. But Jesus said, for you to get behind me, I don't have time to mess with you. I got a job to do. I'm speaking to sons and daughters of God when I say let's get up and be about our Father's business. That's what we need to do, is get up and be about our Father's business. Jonah said, out of my afflictions, out of the belly of hell, I turned in my complaint. And God heard me, and God spoke to the fish. And after all of my contrariness, after I wouldn't listen, after I went every way, but the way he told me when he sent me out to do his work, I went every way I could, Jonah said. Then the belly of the whale swallowed me up. And I cried and I said, Lord, let me out of here. I'll do anything, Lord. Just move this affliction. Move this oppression. Lord, bless me in my finance. I'll do anything, Lord. And then just as contrary as the devil himself. Angry, upset, wouldn't listen, still wouldn't do right. I tell you something, folks. You're going to keep on looking back into Egypt and being contrary, having an old spirit of rebellion and contrariness. Until the first and last, you're going to wind up in a box or something bad's going to happen to you. We've got some people right here that's already, or they've been here, already dead, passed off of the scene. A number of people that I know personally had devils of rebellion, and I told them and they wouldn't listen. Tonight, they're in the dirt. And I've met numbers of people like that in my lifetime, that they are dead and they are buried, young and old alike. And numbers of them that their homes are torn all to pieces. Or they've had breakdowns, nervous breakdowns, a mental collapse, or something has happened to them. Wrecks and sorrows and heartaches and woes. All because they didn't have time to listen. All because they wouldn't lay to heart what the minister said. All because they didn't give the more earnest heed to what he told them. Like I said the other night, there are a few. Jesus said, few there be that find it. Fear not, little flock. There are a few, and he's got a little flock. And they're going to do the will of God. And they're going to lay aside all those things that's unlike Jesus. And God's going to hear them. And they're going to call out of the belly of hell, and God's going to hear them. And God's going to raise them up. And they're not going to be contrary. They're not going to do like Jonah did. They're not going to be contrary. They're going to love the Lord and walk in His ways. Meditate in His laws day and night. They're going to keep a clean heart and a clean life. All right. Jesus said, I'll give you one sign. They said, we want a sign. He said, I'll give you one sign. The sign of the resurrection. Jonah in the belly of the whale. So this is the only sign you'll ever get. There's a Christ that is resurrected from the dead. If that sign isn't sufficient, he said, you won't be getting any more signs. A sinful and an adulterous generation, he said, seeketh after a sign. I give you a sign, Jesus resurrected from the dead. That'll be sufficient. This is the only sign that I'll give you. Somebody said, well, he gave him a lot of other signs. You can't show me one place where you ever give him another sign. You know why he didn't give him another sign? They were blind. They couldn't see. He had healed the sick, raised the dead, done all kind of things in their midst. They never saw any of it. Jesus said, I'll give you one sign. After the church ages, when I bring the Jews back in and I bring you forth, Israel, from your graves, I'll scatter you to the ends of the earth, and when I bring you forth from your graves, you'll have one sign. That's the resurrection. That's all. Blinded in part, till the fullness of the Gentiles could come in. But folks, God's getting to the same place with the Gentiles. Did you know that? The Gentiles has been the most ungodly, the most selfish, the most repulsive, the awfulest people that ever dwelt on the face of the earth. The Jews were never like that. The Gentiles has been rotten and corrupt to the core. They have done things that only demons could possibly do. Has to be demons incarnate. But God's come down to the end of the trail and He's preserved His little few. Holy and godly, without spot, without blemish, without wrinkle. If you're not in that number tonight, you need to get in that number. I want you to stand with me. Thought about asking a few questions tonight, or let you ask a few questions. But I just felt like the Lord wanted me to exhort you a little bit concerning Jonah. Got a lot of Jonahs in the world today. That's the reason we have so much trouble. On that little boat, they didn't have nothing but trouble. The lightning, the thundering. The billows roared because Jonah was on board. And it continued to do that until they threw him overboard. When they threw him overboard, everything was all right. I got a lot of Jonahs are contrary. They won't do nothing that you tell them. They won't help you. They won't work with you. All they do is find fault and Jonah on you. They act real pious and religious in your presence, and they're just out filled with the devil and gossip, backbiting, and everything else when they get out of your presence. But one day it'll catch up with you. The Bible said, I'll take that hypocrite by surprise. Someday I'll meet him face to face. He said, you're a hypocrite and you think I'm altogether such a one as you, and that you can get by with your evil doings. But said, someday I'll let you know that I was watching every bit of it. The eyes of the Lord throughout the earth, listening to every conversation, seeing everything that's being done. Someday, he said, I got it all on record. I'll meet you face to face. It might be a wreck or crash on the highway. It might be a disease. You might get your brains blowed out. It might be something other. It might be your loved ones, whatever. But he said, I'll meet you. I'll meet you. All right. Let's sing a little chorus together. Love Jesus. Sweep over my soul, sweep over my soul, sweet Jesus, sweep over my soul, for my rest it is complete while I sit at your feet. Oh, sweet Jesus, sweep over my soul. For I've anchored my soul in your haven of rest, and I'll sail the wild seas no more. Though the tempest it may sweep over the wild stormy deep, but in Jesus I am safe evermore. Can you sing it with me? For I have anchored my soul in God's haven of rest, and I'll sail the wild seas no more. Though the tempest may sweep over the wild stormy deep, but in Jesus I am safe evermore. Sing it one more time. For I've anchored my soul in God's haven of rest, And I'll sail the wild seas no more. Though the tempest it may sweep over the wild stormy deep, but in Jesus I'm safe evermore. Praise God. It's wonderful to be here tonight. And I say again to them that are spiritual, that great, wonderful thing is still happening every day, every moment. And the excitement of the eternities are unfolding. The wonderful depths of His wisdom and knowledge, and the wonderful greatness of His experience and inspiration, every day in such a great and mighty manner. And we're feeding on the manna from heaven. How beautiful, how wonderful. I trust that as we go along the way, that the Lord will share some of the hidden manna with you. You say, Brother Pike, how can I get that hidden manna? Jesus said, He that overcometh, he that overcometh, I'll give to him a crown of life. And he that overcometh, I will give to him of the hidden manna. That wonderful revelational food, the Bible calls it angel's bread. That wonderful bread of life, that great inspiration that comes from God. God will give it to your angel. It's angel bread. And God will give it to your angel if you overcome the flesh. He that overcometh, I will give to him a crown of life, and he will rule the nations with a rod of iron. He that overcometh. Overcometh what? Bickering, backbiting, jealousy, passions, lust, haughtiness, greed, gullibleness, evil surmising, all of these divisions, tale-bearing, strife, malice, selfishness. He that overcometh, I will give him of that hidden manna, and he can eat from the table of God, from the wonderful table of God. But he said, you cannot eat from the table of devils and expect to get my bread. You can't eat from the table of God, not if you're going to eat from the table of devils. All right, let's just close our eyes, slip our hands up. Tonight, may the Lord bless you. May the Lord help you. Another day has gone by. What did you do today for Jesus? I ask myself, what did I do today for Jesus? Do all things without murmuring and complaining. Have you murmured and complained today? We murmur and complain so often. But have you done anything for Jesus? Have you really got down to business? Have you really listened to what the preacher has said? Have you given the more earnest heed to it? Have you incorporated it in your life? So many of you are not going to pay any attention to it. So many of you are going to die and be cast into the lake of fire. And then in the lake of fire, you're going to say, oh God, I've changed my mind. I didn't mean it like that. Lord, I want another chance. But it'll be eternally too late. It might be before morning. It might be before you get out of this building. It might be within the next week. It might be within the next minute that you breathe your last breath. It's for sure that 1 minute, somewhere, someday, some hour, 1 minute's going to be your last minute. It might not be this minute, but there's a minute down the road somewhere. It might not be this hour, but there's an hour down the road that you're going to be breathing your last breath. Every one of us standing in here, unless Jesus changes these bodies into His likeness, we're going to breathe that breath for the last time. And it's going to be in that hour, whether it's this hour or the hour following or another hour. There is an hour, a minute, a moment, a second, where you're going to be struggling and fighting for your last breath. It's coming to you, folks. All them lies that you've told, all that bickering and backbiting you've done, all that self-righteousness that you've got, instead of depending upon the blood of Jesus and the righteousness of the Son of God, all those things that you keep telling to build up you and to project you, all of that selfishness, division, strife, envy, and all that vainly puffed up fleshly knowledge that you've got, all that you're going to want to get rid of, all that foolishness of aggravating people and tormenting the life out of folks, not using soberness and soundness, being greedy and unconcerned, is going to face you one of these days. When you go to breathe that last breath, it's going to face you. Whether young or old, it's going to face you. You'd been better off if you'd have died as a child. Job cursed the day that he was born. He said he'd been better if I'd have died before it ever came forth. But folks, you can do something for Jesus. You can shine as a light. You can be a holy vessel, a clean vessel. And you can keep your vessel in honor. You can be godly and pure. You can resist the lust, the demons, the devils, the covetousness, the hatred, the malice, the temper, selfishness. You can resist that by drawing nigh to the Word, doing what the Word said. Resist the devil, he'll flee from you. The Word will cast out them unclean spirits and feelings that you think overwhelms you, that you don't have any strength against, or you don't put up any effort against. The Word will give you strength. The Word will make you want to do right. You know, folks, you can't cast the devil out of a man or woman unless they want it cast out. If a man was a feeble mental case where he couldn't help himself, it wouldn't make any difference. You could go up if he had the power, cast it out. But as long as a person's got enough understanding to know what they're talking about, you can't cast the devil out of them if they don't want it out of them. If they want to cuddle that old feeling of melancholiness and selfishness, hatred and gossip and whatever, you can't cast it out of them, because they don't want it out of them. That old demon of hatred and fault-finding self-will, one day it'll hang them like it did Judas. And after a while, you'll find yourself hanging on the end of the rope. Old saying, you give a man enough rope, he'll hang himself. While you've got your heads bowed, I'm going to ask Brother John Jameson to come and pray with us. Think over these few little remarks, few little things that we said to you. You don't have any idea, folks, how wonderful and how great they really are. But in the day of the judgment, when you start searching in your little treasure chest and you find all these jewels that come forth tonight missing, you find out you didn't incorporate these things in your life, then's when you're going to feel like a pauper. And you're going to say, I wonder what I did with all them beautiful things. Heavenly treasure in earthen vessels. Now is made known to the church the manifold wisdom of God from heavenly places. John.